I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
What happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare?
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
This supplemental funding will ensure Putin faces some nasty surprises on the battlefield.
Friday evening in Moscow, when four ISIS-K terrorists armed with automatic weapons shot their way into a concert hall at a shopping complex. More than 135 men, women, and children slaughtered. Hundreds more injured.
We have anti-terrorist measures introduced in Moscow and in Moscow region. What's critical right now is to make sure that those who are behind this bloodbath are not allowed to do so again.
Instead of dealing with his Russian citizens and addressing them, Putin was silent for the whole day, thinking about how to link the attack to Ukraine. It's completely predictable.
Air raid sirens sounded in Kyiv after a wave of Russian missile strikes against Ukraine on Sunday. Residents made their way into subway stations to seek shelter. Kyiv said the airstrikes struck critical infrastructure in western Ukraine.
All of this, I think, is an absolutely measured attack by Russia, just ramping up pressure on Ukraine.
Poland's armed forces say one of the Russian missiles actually passed through Polish airspace.
Yeah, we hear reports that the Poles are identifying that one missile did pass through their airspace, and that's a NATO country, so that's incredibly dangerous.
The company Digital World Acquisition Corporation has agreed to merge with Trump Media, which owns Truth Social. The deal could bring an estimated $3 billion for the former president.
A state appeals court judge has just granted Trump's request to stay the $464 million judgment in his New York civil fraud case. The court has granted him 10 days to pay a reduced bond of $175 million.
Thank you very much.
What's your collateral bond?
Cash. All right, Jack Posobiec, live here, Human Events Daily. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of the show, live from Washington, D.C. Today is March 25th, 2024, Anno Domini. A lot of news in New York City coming out for President Trump today. We've got a massive win at the appeals court, but we've also got other news to dig into, and we're going to get into all of it. First of all, the left is melting down over this appeals court ruling, striking down so much of the Judge Engoron verdict. This, of course, in the quote-unquote fraud trial that we were told about that was passed a couple of weeks ago. Specifically, what they've done is cut down the amount of money from $435 million to $175, less than half. Not only did they say that, but listen to this. In its order Monday, the New York Appeals Court also stayed the trial judge Arthur Engoron's decision that had barred Trump from serving as an officer or director of a New York company for 3 years, that had barred him and the corporate defendants from applying for loans from New York lenders for the same period. The order also stayed Engoron's ruling that had barred Trump's sons, Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, from serving as officers and directors of New York companies. This thing's going up to the appeals court, and they're looking at it saying, this is a joke. This is ridiculous. And they're getting rid of it. This is why you don't let communists on the bench. But unfortunately, we still have a lot of communists on the bench, and we've got a lot of ways to go. And so for people who want to say, oh, this will all strike down at the appeals court, everything will be fine, we'll see. But it's very clear that this ridiculous ruling in a ridiculous case that never should have been brought in the first place, completely political, with this communist judge, Judge Engoron. That's what he is. He's a communist. We're going to call him a communist because we call communists what they are here on Human Events Daily. In fact, he wrote a whole book about it. So That's number one. Number two, because this is the 1-2 punch that comes out of New York. In addition to that, the date has now been set for the first criminal case regarding President Trump. April 15th. The judge said that they were not willing to wait for presidential immunity or a number of these other things, that they're hurtling forward just about 3 weeks from today. We will see President Trump, apparently, unless anything else changes, and we know there's been a lot going back and forth. President Trump on trial, New York City, April 15th. Alvin Bragg, Stormy Daniels is apparently the subject of this case. And remember, this is the case that they didn't even bring forward because Michael Cohen had credibility issues, and those 73,000 documents from the Southern District of New York have something in them that really scared Alvin Bragg. Tony Schaefer joins us next. Russia responding. Massive strikes. Kiev, Odessa, all throughout Ukraine. Stay here. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week.
Bloods, and them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trim out his outlets, a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, back live. Jack Posobiec here, Human Events Daily. Want to bring on now Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Tony, now,
hey,
I've been keeping track this entire weekend. How's it going? As well as you, I'm sure, on this horrific terror attack took place in Moscow, the capital of Russia, this Crocus City attack. Right off the bat, I have to ask, there's been this huge back and forth between the U.S. government, really directly, and the Kremlin over who is responsible for this attack. And the U.S. government coming out, including the National Security Council, under Jake Sullivan, saying this is ISIS, this is the Islamic State, it's definitely the Islamic State, there's no one else involved, Ukraine is definitely not involved. Fastest investigation you've ever seen. They've been able to, apparently they couldn't stop the attack, but now they know everything about it all of a sudden, magically, at the White House. The same, by the way, U.S. government that put out a cable all the way back on March 7th saying that extremist groups were about to target a concert in Moscow.
Right.
But Russia coming back and responding, saying essentially, think again about the Islamic State being the only entity involved in this. Of course, Putin giving this national address saying that there was a window opened for these fighters on the other side of the Ukrainian border. Tony, walk me through this, because this one don't smell right to me. This one don't smell right at all.
So I think you need to take a step back even further than the 7 March warning. I mean, to Victoria Nuland herself, Tory, as they call her, State Department, had many friends, and people saw her as a very warm and nice person to hang out with. And she's gone now. And I think part of the reason she's gone is because she had made direct threats to Vladimir Putin and the Russians. That's all on tape. And she's very direct in her saying that Putin is going to get, quote unquote, surprises. So, you know, let's start with that as a start point. And then you move up to the 7 March warning. And I don't know if you saw it, Diamond John Kirby was there at the White House saying, oh, well, you know, we don't know what, we didn't have any threat information behind our putting out a warning on 7 March. What? You just randomly put a warning out saying, hey, don't show up at concerts in Moscow, maybe bad. Oh, yeah, we don't know why we put that out. We just put it out.
Look, I'll say this as a guy who was an expat for many years, that usually when you see warnings like that coming out of the embassy or coming out of the State Department, they are not that specific. This one specifically said concerts, specifically said extremist groups. That's like, you knew something, and that was a slight, that's it. You and I, since we've dealt with declassification, that was somebody had a report, could have been a walk-in, whatever it was, we don't know. And they said, all right, we're going to declassify just enough of this to put it out to the public.
Right.
That was based on that. A report 100%.
And there's a requirement for us to warn people. Absolutely. There's requirements to warn. There are. And I've been in that seat. You have too. So you have to do that. So, you know, now they're saying, oh, we had no specific threat. Okay. So it's just this breadcrumb of like, really? It's like there's that 1990 song, Things That Make You Go, Hmm. And it's like, wow. And so when you look at this and then you look at what John Kirby has said and others have said and Jake Sullivan, when's the last time, Jack, you and I saw this immediate response with all the details? Oh, yeah, 9-11. Within 48 hours, they'd listed out all the 9-11 hijackers. Gee, it's really strange how the U.S. government can be so completely naive to things but have all the details within 48 hours. And you and I both know, as intelligence professionals, you don't gather that information that quickly without already having a head start. So there's something going on, and I don't know what it is, but the day that I see Jake Sullivan calling for a ceasefire between ISIS and Russia is the day I believe that the Biden White House had nothing to do with whatever we're talking about.
Well, so let's walk through that a little bit. There's the mechanics of the attack, the operational, as well as strategic. So on the strategic basis, let's start there, since you mentioned ceasefire. Yeah. Israel Gaza has been one of the largest in terms of brutality conflicts that have gone on anywhere in the world. It's incredibly graphic. It's making lots of headlines all throughout the Middle East. And yet ISIS doesn't seem to want to get involved anywhere involving that. They decide to respond to Israel Gaza with an attack on random Russian civilians in Moscow. Yeah. Is that the TTP of ISIS?
No. So you and I both studied a little bit about ISIS and what ISIS does and does not do. I think we've had adequate time now, Jack, to actually look at attack profiles by ISIS. ISIS normally sends people who are on a one-way trip. They don't line up cars and escape routes to get their people out. That's not part of their methodology. It's kind of like jihad.
I've never seen jihadis with an escape plan before. It's kind of
like
point.
It's like a Japanese kamikaze pilot with an escape plan. It's like, oh yeah, I'm not really going to go into the Eisenhower. I mean, oh my God, I can't even think of my world to the Enterprise. So this is the issue. It's like that's not typical, and so. I'm looking forward, in a way, to seeing what the Russians come up with relating to the individuals and the questioning. I mean, look, I'm not going to put a happy face on this. The Russians are going to be brutal. The Russians don't mess around. The Russians, when they think they're onto something, are dogged and they don't stop. By the way, they've done this is what they do in the Middle East. They're you hit the Russians, they're going to hit you back, and they're going to hit you back hard. And so I think you're going to see something here of that regard. And to that regard, for better or for worse, I'm calling balls and strikes. I'm not here to judge. Putin is convinced, the Russian Republic is convinced, that Ukraine had a role because of the very thing you mentioned. These guys had an escape plan. For better or for worse, the SFB let them go. It's like, okay, they're in their little escape car. Let's see where they go. And sure enough, they headed for the border in Ukraine. Is that an indicator that Ukraine was involved? Not necessarily, but it is very interesting that they apparently did feel that Ukraine would be an opening for them to get out. But going back to the original point, it's like, I don't think ISIS fighters generally have a, escape plan, since their escape plan is to go see Allah when they're done with their attack.
Well, explain this to me as well. And because we can see the videos that have been released, these horrific videos, and we may not even play some of these on here. I've seen videos of these guys running around, chopping people's heads off, slitting throats. Again, innocent civilians inside this concert hall in Moscow. And then just a couple of hours later, they're screaming, they're running up trees, they're crying, they're squealing. Something just seems off. Something seems absolutely off here.
Well, there is something off. I mean, it doesn't fit. What we're being asked to do is accept three things on face value. First, the Biden administration's testimony that, it's only ISIS. I just don't trust the Biden administration on anything, period. I just don't. And this is no exception. Secondly, we're being asked to accept on face value the Biden and world judgment that, oh, by the way, this is ISIS because it fits the profile of an ISIS attack. It doesn't fit a profile at all of an ISIS attack. It's the opposite. It looks like something of a hodgepodge. It was kind of a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But it's the only thing that's clear is it was against civilians who died horribly, painful deaths. And my heart goes out to those civilians. I mean, they're civilians. These aren't combatants, no matter how you do it. And the third thing that's most notable is that there is a trail of crumbs that go back to our State Department threatening the Russians and Putin. So of course, the 7 March thing. I don't know what to make of it, but it doesn't look good. If you put all those pieces together, it doesn't add up, Jack, to an ISIS-K attack without some level of support, encouragement, funding, or otherwise something had to happen. If it was, I'm not saying it wasn't ISIS-K. I'm saying if it was ISIS-K, they got a lot of help from somebody.
And a lot of people are asking so many questions about this because, of course, we don't see these guys acting the same way. And just based on the observable videos that we can see, even when they're in the courtroom, you know, they're not making any gestures like ISIS, holding up the one finger. They're not attempting to say Allahu Akbar. They're not attempting any of these things. I mean, the same deal with when they're captured, you know, the screaming, the crying, these are not hardened jihadis.
Right.
It's just clear they are not. And I've been in situations, as have you, both when I served down at Torak, Guantanamo Bay and others, where I've been face to face with these types. This is not how they act.
No. I was in the Bagram collection point in Afghanistan when we saw the real jihadis come in. And there's a difference. You can tell who the guys are that they're, you know, they don't want to be there and they want to be dead versus someone who's captured incidental to combat operations. These to me remind me more of combatants who got caught, you know, the prisoners of war, because they're not actually committed to the cause. Do I believe they're Tajiks? Yeah. I think they look like Tajiks, at least, you know, from what the pictures I've seen, they kind of meet the way Tajiks look, that I remember meeting Tajiks in Afghanistan and that region in Tajikistan, but it doesn't make them ISIS-K. They could be that's what they're saying. So
let me ask you directly. You kind of answered my question there. It was going to, right before we go to the break, do you think they are hired hands?
They, from my experience, Jack, as an intelligence professional who's been on the front lines in the war of terror, who had to face actual, you know, people who wanted to kill and die in the process, these people don't seem to meet that profile by any regard. And I look forward to other, I'm open to others telling me I'm wrong.
All right, Tony Schaefer, stay tuned. We're going to come right back because we've talked about the issues with this attack. Now we have to talk about the response. Tony Schaefer joins us next here, continuing Human Events Daily.
You know, they talk about influencers. These are influencers. And they're friends of mine. Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack, he's done a great job.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. I'd like to tell you about today's sponsor, Human Events Daily, Allegiance Gold. If you're part of our audience, you know exactly what's going on with the U.S. dollar. Now, Putin himself said it during that Tucker Carlson interview that was seen over 100 million times. We are printing too much money, and the weaponization of the dollar was a mistake. The consequences of overprinting could be catastrophic for your family's future, and with 401k accounts losing 25% of their value the past 2 to 3 years, why would you continue to risk your personal savings? Don't gamble with your financial future. Invest in the one thing that's been proven stable for centuries, gold from the company I trust, Allegiance Gold. You will not be disappointed. I know them. I've spent time with Mark and Michael. Their relationships are based on integrity, expertise, and impeccable service. That's why they've earned the highest trust ratings in the precious metals industry. Go to protectwithposo.com today or call 844-577-POSO. Right now, get up to $5,000 in free silver with a qualifying purchase. Don't get fooled by inflated stock values or the promise that the economy is stable. Protect your financial future today. Protectwithposo.com. That's protectwithposo.com or call 844-577-POSO. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is our guest. Tony, now we've gone through and I've been keeping track just throughout the day. I was on War Room this morning. We saw these hypersonic strikes on Kiev potentially hitting. And it was amazing because it seemed like, Zelensky's out there saying, oh, it hit these kids. It was a school full of children. It was an orphanage and all this. And then the Kiev Post, I guess, didn't get the memo because they said, oh, you know, they struck the headquarters of the SBU, the security services headquarters. So right there, you know, putting their own president's credibility completely at risk, which really speaks also to this infighting that you and I have been discussing going on at the highest levels of the Ukrainian government, the Zelensky regime really on its last legs here. And then just before we went to air, it looks like Odessa has been hit as well. And so we are Putin speaking again right now. This is breaking news. Putin has said that they are a radical Islamist who committed the attack, but we are interested in who ordered the atrocity. They wanted to get to Ukraine. The question is why. So that's Putin's latest statement. Again, Kiev and Odessa being hit right now. Tony, what kind of response are we going to see here? Because we've already been talking about the fact that the momentum has totally swung in Russia's direction. The real question, I suppose, is what happens next?
So I think we're near an endgame. The recent spat of actions from Ukraine indicate that Ukraine is not doing well. Now, I think Zelensky is almost done. And the reason I think that is because I think Victoria Nuland stepping down had a lot to do with the fact that the experiment's not working out. The other thing that I've noticed is that in most of the responses of Ukraine against Russia have been special operations related. They had incursions into the Kursk region recently, within the last 10 days. One of those within Belgorod, that region, they actually tried to seize a nuclear weapons depot, which was like kind of like nobody even picked up on. It's like, okay, it's pretty important. You should probably be looking at that. But I see this more and more as desperation from Ukraine. So again, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying that more and more of what I've seen from Ukraine is desperation. They're doing things to try to get attention of the West to say, hey, we're still in the fight. Give us like $60 billion so we can continue to do things. So I think it's all about at this point trying to demonstrate to the West, the EU and the United States, that they're still in the fight. I don't think they're going to be successful. I think the more they get desperate, the more people are going to turn their back and say, yeah, we're done here. And I think that's where it's all going at this point.
And so the real question is, and this is why people have been asking me all last week, they said, how did you know that there was going to be terror attacks in the backfield, terror attacks on Russian civilians and civilian infrastructure in Russia? And they were playing clips of me from going on Alex Jones and here back in early March saying this. And it was exactly these conversations between you and myself, Tony, this idea that Ukraine knew that they were not going to achieve, and they had not achieved the battlefield successes that they had wanted. And so what were they doing? They were putting people in positions of power, like this guy, Budinov, and others that were directly tied to the CIA. That's the CIA's man.
Exactly.
We have this crazy New York Times article that you and I slice and diced. And it seems as though they're moving into the direction of an insurgency. I guess here's my real question, though.
Yeah.
So people keep saying, Russia has annexed the four provinces, four oblasts already. Mearsheimer says they're going to take another four. My question for you is, at this point, do you think Russia leaves Zelensky in power?
Good question. And our friends over at the Durand have been talking about that. I don't want to steal their thunder, but there's some belief over there on the Durand guys that if Putin can make a direct link to Zelensky to the terror attack, I think there's a good possibility that the shield of protection the Russians have given Zelensky, because Jack, why would you screw with an enemy who actually is doing your work for you? I think Zelensky and his bad decisions are something the Russians have come to embrace, but there's a certain point of diminishing returns. That diminishing return would be reached if Putin is convinced that Zelensky either had a hand in or authorized any part of the attack on the venue, the people there. So I think if it can be proven, if there's some evidence that can be presented by the Russians that Crocus, that that place was attacked by, you know, with full knowledge and support of Ukraine in some form. I'm not saying they did it. I'm saying that I think that's what would remove any restrictions by Putin and Russia going after Zelensky.
And that's something where, you, of course, you've seen some of these rank-and-file Russian politicians in the State Duma coming out and saying that they don't want this to be referred to as a special military operation anymore. They want this to be a full war. It also certainly galvanizes the Russian population. Right. And if you've looked at Russians online over the last 48 hours, that suffice to say they are walking into military recruitment stations saying, where can I go? I saw videos of some of the Russian bombs that were being loaded onto these aircraft before they took off, some of these, the Tu-95s, the Tupolevs, and, it read for Crocus, for Crocus City Hall.
Right.
And so there's an idea already, right? It's kind of like the investigation will be there. And the investigation is going to happen, and the investigation is going to come out, and I'm sure these guys will, they're certainly going to give up a lot more information than they thought they were. But there's also, the response is already in motion, I guess is what I'm trying to say, and you're not going to be able to stop this train. You're just not.
No, well, Jack, to your point, I mean, if you look at the current displacement of CIA stations, we've talked about it. New York Times has confirmed that there are CIA bases in Ukraine. You've got Victoria Nuland commenting on the record in public multiple times about asymmetric responses from Ukraine to Russia. It's kind of like, dude, either she's a moron and gave away the farm, or Putin is the master of 5D chess and basically did a false flag and took advantage of the stupidity of Victoria. I mean, I don't know which one it is. I mean, but it's bad. And no matter how you want to portray it, how the American public wants to portray it, Victoria Nuland has said things. She threatened Putin directly. She threatened the Russian people directly. That's never smart. And if you now look at, like, Tory, was it really wise for you to have said those things? Because one way or another, Russians are going to take advantage of what you said. And no matter what, the United States is going to be looked at because of what she said. And Ukraine's going to draw Ukraine's going to draw the brunt of fire no matter what now, because partly she's saying she was actually in Ukraine when she said these things, Jack. For whatever reason, she's going to draw fire to Ukraine based on what she said.
This, to me, has all the hallmarks of a botched operation, because I'll tell you something right now. There's no question that whoever was behind this thing did not intend for those individuals to be taken alive. There's no question in my mind. And if they were intended to be received on the other side of the Ukraine, but whoever they were received by, I'll tell you right now, they were not going to walk out of that forest alive, one way or the other. In fact, ending up with Spetsnaz or whoever it was that picked them up there on the other side is probably the only reason they're still alive right now, because these guys were loose ends the minute that they left that city hall. They were loose ends, and we all know loose lips sink ships. Those guys were going to be taken out. They were never going to end up in safe haven. And, I was reading some of these reports, and it's hard to, parse it, but they said, we're going to get from Ukraine to Turkey and from Turkey to Afghanistan and got this whole plan line. No, guys, no way. You were never getting out of that forest. And honestly, they probably thought you were going to die, because that's usually what Russians do when they respond to terrorism in the first place.
No, I think they really thought the FSB is going to kill them on the spot, which, in the past, I think would have been a typical response. But I think the Russians were actually trying to figure it out here. I think there was a reason why they held back and didn't kill these guys on the spot. So, there are clues to be had. And there's a lot of contradicting clues right now, Jack. By the way, I think this is why the Biden administration can't get its story straight. This thing, whatever it is so complicated, the narrative cannot be controlled. And people, have not actually been able to understand what they're supposed to say at certain times, I believe. So,
yeah, I would just say to anybody who's hanging out with Vladimir Zelensky right now, you probably want to go somewhere else. But maybe go hang out. Just stay home. Leave. Don't go to the bunker. Don't go to Zelensky's house for the next for the foreseeable future. Last minute, Tony Schaefer, what are you working on? Where can people go to follow you and support your work?
So, you know, we're together on Twitter. I just tweeted out some stuff you and I were talking about. And then Project Sentinel, projectsentinel.com is a place to come check us out. And I just want to kind of do a shout out to you, Jack, because, you know, you and I have talked about this for over a year now about kind of where the direction of things are going. And I take no pride in you and I being correct. I'm really kind of sad, but I think, to be honest, we kind of saw it coming. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Project Sentinel. Make sure you're going to follow him. Make sure you are supporting him, supporting his work. All of us together on Team Humanity are going to be able to bring this thing forward. Joshua Lysak, one of the key chiefs of Team Humanity, joins us next.
Jack, where's Jack? Where's Jack? Where is he? Jack, I want to see you. Great job, Jack. Thank you. What a job you do. You know, we have an incredible thing. We're always talking about the fake news and the bad, but we have guys, and these are the guys who should be getting Pulitzers.
All right, Jack, so back here live, Human Events Daily. The book is Unhumans, tearing up the charts. Just hit number 47, broke into the top 50. Of all of Amazon. That's all books. That's not like one of those, you know, special category type of things. We are joined now by co-author of the book, Joshua Lysak. Joshua, you know, what is it about, look, when you and I said that we would, you know, talk about doing a book together, and when, you know, we'd sort of been chatting about it off and on for a while, you'd been attempting your best persuasion angles on me for quite some time to do a book. And then I said, well, you know, why don't we do this communism book? Did you expect it to go this big this quickly? And what do you think you attribute it to, the mass response that we're seeing?
Yes, thanks for having me on, Jack. The first issue that is worth uncovering is the problem with historical nonfiction. That is a book where you're talking about stuff that happened in the past. Because the obvious question to answer is, so what? There are avid readers of historical nonfiction, not so many on details of communist revolutions. Who cares that they were Bolsheviks? Who cares that there were riots against landlords in pre-World War II China? Who cares that Franco was this, that, or the other? A liberator or a fascist, depending upon your orientation. Who cares? That was the first question we had to answer. And we answered it relatively quickly. We began to realize through our research and working on the book that there are patterns that are followed in every communist revolution. That is, a communist revolution is when there's one class or one group of people who claim to be oppressed. They are have-nots relative to a have class or group in that society. This would be the oppressor group. And a communist revolution is an implementation of Marxism. That is the Karl Marx hypothesis that in order for there to be utopia in a society, the poor, the non-owners of stuff, have to rise up and rob and kill their oppressors, the people who have stuff. And that, of course, has taken a socioeconomic bent in the past with obvious revolutions, but we see that done culturally in what's been termed cultural Marxism. And throughout these periods and these events, we begin to see obvious parallels to the present day that begin to not just explain, because hindcasting is cool, but it doesn't tell you anything about what to expect. And we realize that we're currently experiencing in the Western world, United States in particular, a communist revolution 2.0. And that revelation is what has made the book catch on so fast. Because that one little reframe of the history of communism being the story of the news today, tomorrow, and hopefully not forever, but that does seem to be the case, at least in the moment, that is what has rocketed the book up the charts so quickly.
And then just tie into that on the news right now. This whole thing about the squatters recently and the squatters' rights and the squatters are coming up everywhere. I say, wait a minute. So you're telling me that the left doesn't respect private property rights and actually wants to give your private property to classes of people that they feel are oppressed. Has anything like this ever happened ever in history? And is it possible that some people could write a book about, I don't know, responding to it and doing something about it based on best practices that have worked? I mean, it just, I don't see any relevance to that in current society. Do you?
And that is precisely why the book has become so popular so quickly with just its announcement a few days ago, is that once we point out that the history of the Communist Revolution is the story of the present moment and what we need to do about it, it gives the past a new relevance. So this book is unlike other histories of communist periods. Now, we do not go into exhaustive intellectual detail of every single factoid that is relevant and pertinent to communism in Cambodia or to Romania or to Africa or to Spain, because number one, nobody cares. Number two, once you read one of these stories in depth, after the second or third one, you kind of got the idea. You know how it's going to go. And then, of course, we give both expansive overviews, but also abridged versions of the communist revolutions throughout the world. And you've noticed that they follow the same three acts. Just as every story of myth and entertainment follows the three-act story structure, well, we humans are a story-driven people. And so whenever we see a communist revolution, it follows three acts. Now, what we see in America, in this cultural Marxism, it's more of a series of micro-revolutions that are launched, these uprising revolts and rebellions that are launched against specific individuals or groups that are in certain geographics or certain areas where communism is allowed, or as we like to call it, the forces of anti-civilization, unhumanity, because the communists, wherever they go throughout history, they do not recognize the rights to life, liberty, and property. In fact, when communists are able to wield power, they actively disintegrate rights to life, liberty, and property. And they do so in the name of what? The name of equality.
The name of equality, the name of egalitarianism. And the key point here that conservatives and classic liberals and moderates and really anyone who just doesn't stand with the far extreme left on this, that they need to understand and accept is a software update. And the software update is this. The people we face do not believe the things that they say. They do not actually care. You can point out their hypocrisy. You can point out their double standards. You can point out the fact that the things that they say on Tuesday do not match the things that they said on Monday, which do not match the things they said on the previous Friday. And guess what? They will never actually care or acquiesce to your arguments in any way. They just want to defeat you. And the only thing they fear is power. The only thing they fear is action. The only thing they fear is reciprocity. And by the way, people have said, oh, well, that means you're smearing them all with naughty words and you know, mean language. No. We're talking about these people who harass you, who debank you. And some of the actions that we take and some of the outcomes are very simple things, you know, and it runs the gamut from the higher end of the great men of means, which we get into in the book, but also this step-by-step action plan that people can take. It's really something that people can do on their own, isn't that right?
Yes, that's right. There are specific things that individuals can do to shore up their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor in order to protect themselves and their families from the coming micro-revolution. We use words like, oh, getting doxxed and canceled, you know, debanked and deplatformed. Well, those are low-intensity conflict versions of a communist uprising. You see, military engagements have changed over the last 75 years or so. It went from open war on the battlefield to more quiet conflicts where infrastructure is destroyed somehow by an enemy power, but you're not exactly sure maybe who it was, or there's a trade war occurring, or intellectual property is seized, or supply chains are intentionally disrupted, or misinformation is sown in the population of one country by another country's government. It's total war on all fronts, information space, socioeconomic war, trade war, so on and so forth. That's what's called low-intensity conflict. But it's every bit as real and relevant as an obvious military engagement. But the issue is now that every citizen becomes a combatant. That is the fact of irregular warfare. And then we see, as we've done through our research and as we demonstrate in the book, communist revolutions being political tools to create change, similar to war, they too have followed this transition from riots in the streets, the seizing of the Bastille, the Red Square, these sorts of obvious visual dense groups of people literally overthrowing statues and overtaking buildings and waving red flags, like we all know the pictures of in the films that we've seen. Nowadays, communist revolutions against an individual can be one judge or one prosecutor and their cronies against one man, against one woman.
Coming
it
up,
can be an anonymous
coming
hate
up on
mob.
A break. Joshua Lysak walking us through the irregular communist revolution that we are currently in. Stay tuned, be right back.
Hours. I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live. The book is Unhuman. We're here with co-author Joshua Lysak walking through the stages and circumstances of the irregular communist revolution that we're currently in. You know, there's a reason that you can see the culture war online, and you can go on Twitter, you can go on any social media, you can find the culture war. It's very easy, as a matter of fact, just open the news. But if you walk down the street, you're not going to see a civil war, you're not going to see bodies piled up the way you would in the Russian Civil War, the Spanish Civil War, the Chinese Civil War. And there's a reason for that, because this is fifth generation communist warfare. And in a sense, the Chinese Cultural Revolution itself, all the way back in the 1960s in China, and it's depicted in this new Three-Body Problem by Netflix, was actually an example of fourth generation warfare, because it separates the distinction between civilian and combatant. There are no non-combatants in one of these. There are none in a cultural revolution. That's why what we're in is a direct example of the guerrillas now coming onto social media and using the internet to further their social engineering, the misinformation, non-kinetic attacks. Exactly what Joshua is describing, these micro revolutions that get launched on a regular basis. But Joshua, what I wanted to dig into with you as well, and I spoke about this on War Room earlier this morning, this idea that Unhumans actually gives people tools to fight back. Because, look, I could sit here all day long and come up with the conservative outrage porn and say, oh, look at this crazy thing a liberal did, and look at that liberal thing, and aren't you so mad? Aren't you so mad? I'm sick of being mad. I'm sick of the outrage porn. I want to do something. I want to take action. How is this book going to help me do that?
Yes, in the book, particularly towards the end, as we build up from the history of the past to a vision for the future that we cast, we lay out the three defeats of communism. When a communist revolution has been defeated, or it almost was, but there was not enough willpower behind those opposing the communist revolution, and this is over the last 250 years in particular, the three defeats of communism as are follows. The first thing is, to gently paraphrase our friend Scott Adams, is to get away. Let them eat themselves. History shows that in a communist revolution, once the communist militias, once the actual radicals are done robbing and killing their enemies, the oppressors, the haves, as they see them, what did they then do? They then turn their guns on each other. We saw this to a dark comedic effect in the Spanish Civil War, when the wrong kinds of communists who had been shooting religious people, Catholics, citizens, to create a reign of terror across Spain. The wrong kind of communists, those who were supporters and devotees of Leon Trotsky as opposed to the contemporary Joseph Stalin, they were rounded up, taken out, and shot. As we see in the Soviet Union, as we've seen elsewhere in time, and as we go through in the book, communism will defeat itself. It will eat itself because it is a ideology that organizes, but it does not know how to stay organized because all it does is robs and kills every single time. It is unhumanity. And so once those with means have been robbed and killed, well, whoever has what was been robbed now gets robbed, on and on and on.
Like we can see, I have to say this, President Trump is up there right now. Donald Trump, so take the politics out of it. Donald Trump, one of the most successful, certainly the most well-known real estate magnate of New York City, is having his businesses stripped bare in front of the entire world to see his name. They are talking about seizing Trump Tower. They are talking about seizing his Westchester golf course, and all being done because people have decided that he is an oppressor. They can't actually point to anything that he's done to oppress the people of New York. In fact, the entities in New York that have done business with him all say they would like to continue doing business with him. But that's not the point, is it, Joshua?
No. President Trump and his family are experiencing lawfare, which is when the legal system is weaponized by radicals, by revolutionaries against a class. Now, in the context of the low-intensity conflict, the Communist Revolution 2.0, the micro-revolution comes for not necessarily an entire population, but for specific targets, key targets that if you're able to neutralize them, and you don't literally have to kill them, because this is not warfare like on the battlefields, two armies shooting at one another once you can see the whites of their eyes. This is who can we steal from, destroy without having a military response or at least a reciprocal response brought towards us. And that's why there hasn't been a meaningful response. Low-intensity warfare is sneaky. This is the hallmark of irregular warfare. And yet this is precisely what's happening right now. The only way to restore civilization to President Trump's family and to anyone who falls into the crosshairs of the micro-revolution is reciprocity. Civilization is built on reciprocity. In fact, the oldest code of law in the world, the Code of Hammurabi, says that if you gouge out someone's eye, guess what you get to lose next? If you make a false accusation against someone, whatever you accuse them of, you are now guilty of. Reciprocity is, you suppose you could call it the platinum rule, even far and above the golden rule. It is what brought us from prehistory as a species into recorded history, reciprocity.
Might even throw out the iron rule, because it is the rule that brought us the Iron Age.
Fair. Yes, without reciprocity, we have no civilization. We become an anti-civilization. We go from being Homo sapiens to being unhumans. And that's the point of the book, and that seems to be why the title of the book has triggered both wolves and the wolves in sheep's clothing, because they realize we're talking about them. It's very telling that leftists and self-styled communists who have, we'll put it gently, we'll say they reached out to us. they responded, they reacted to the title of the book, and they immediately said,
one or two,
talking about me. Yes.
Joshua, we are just about out of time. Where can people go to get the book and follow you?
Yes. Unhumans, The Secret History of Communist Revolutions and How to Crush Them is available right now on Amazon, as well as from the Skyhorse Publishing, a bookstore online. Pre-order.
All right. Make sure you are following Joshua. And make sure to understand, folks, this is not just a history book. This is a workbook. This is an outline. This is a plan for us to come forward and crush them. No more outrage porn. Now is the time for action. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay ashore.